Movies are cultural touchstones of collective consciousness. Film is a universal language and a medium to which we communicate. A quote there from Terry George, one of Ireland's most successful screenwriters, whose work includes Hotel Rwanda and In the Name of the Father, both of which have been nominated for an Oscar and a BAFTA award. Terry George will be giving a screenwriter's masterclass at the Galway Film Fla this Friday, the 13th of July, in the Radisson Hotel. And he joins me now on the line from the US. Terry George, you're very welcome to the 11th hour.
Thanks, Sam. Glad to be on.
Traumatic political events comprise the bulk of your output. Is it a case of you can take the man out of Northern Ireland, but you can't take the troubles out of the man? Is that it?
Maybe so. It's just, for me, finding these personal stories in amongst great human tragedies are what interests me most, and I think that's the challenge, to make them, to turn them into some sort of entertainment that moves people. So, yeah. So I guess that's good analysis of it.
You grew up in a predominantly Protestant neighbourhood, and you got into plenty of bother when you were a young Catholic man. Did that bother sort of educate you towards your work now?
Well, it certainly informed it. In the first three movies I did, you know, In the Name of the Father, Some Mother, Son, and The Boxer, are all related to the Troubles, or set during the Troubles, and so that was a direct relationship of writing about stuff I'd encountered. And yeah, and I think it does give you a perspective about how human beings can survive in conflict situations, sure. I trained to try and look for the stories behind the story, you know, like in Jerry Conlon's case. Just how did the IRA campaign in England and the British justice system's reaction to it impact on ordinary human beings? To humanize the situation and take an audience inside it so that they can see it from the perspective of the people most affected by it, that's what I'm most interested in doing.
What attracted you or brought you to the whole Hotel Rwanda story in the first place?
Well, I wanted to write something about Africa because I felt that the Hollywood film industry in particular just avoided the subject like the plague, you know, of the stories of ordinary Africans who were trying to survive in the most horrendous wars and political turmoil. And so I started out to write a fictional feature film set in Sierra Leone that would have been quite similar to what Blood Diamond became. And in the middle of that, I received a script which told the story of the Millie Colleen Hotel in Kigali. And so when I read that, I knew it was a story and a human being who encapsulated the whole sort of spirit of ordinary Africans trying to survive in these wars. And so that I switched over to that right away. And then I went and met Paul Rousset Sabagina in Belgium and just persuaded him that I was the one to do the film and talked to him about his experiences.
Did you travel to Rwanda to get a sense of what went on there?
Oh, I did, yeah. I've been there a few times. And I did. I went back with Paul and his wife, Tatiana. It was their first time back since the genocide, so it was a very kind of traumatic and moving experience to go back with them. And then I traveled around the country and talked to other people who had either hidden at the hotel or knew the stories and so forth.
And did the experience you had with trauma and bother in Northern Ireland sort of steal you for this experience of going to Rwanda?
I don't know that anything can steal you for that experience, but it gave me a perspective, because in a strange way there were a lot of similarities, you know, a divided community and a situation where extremists had manipulated the fears of ill-educated people to believe that the other side was going to steal their land or, you know, harm their children, and just the exploitation of that seemed quite similar to situations I'd encountered in the north. So, but the actual experience of being there and going to the genocide sites and the memorials and talking to people and listening to just the depth of the depravity and savagery that was, nothing in Northern Ireland would prepare you for that.
Did the people of Rwanda feel, what did they feel about your movie? Did they feel that it had helped them, or what did they feel about Hotel Rwanda?
Well, they started off feeling great about it, and then Paul got into a political argument with the current president, President Kagame, and now he's public enemy number one and persona non grata. So it's kind of sad that today's politics kind of took over the effect that the movie had. So, but I think initially and certainly around the world, people were very gratified that it was made. And then subsequently, two other movies about the genocide came out. So there became a sort of mini theater of relating what had happened in Rwanda. And I think it helped a little bit with raising awareness about Darfur and just about, you know, ongoing sort of situation in Africa.
It will take a long time to heal what has happened in Northern Ireland, but that must be huge, much greater problem in Rwanda, the process of healing.
Yeah, it is, and that's part of the problem that Paul has encountered, because he, being Hutu, feels that he needs to be a spokesman for the 75% of the population who he believes don't have a voice at the moment. The current government and President Kagame's government, which has done a lot of good, are inclined not to allow that, the very use of those names, Hutu and Tutsi, and claim anyone bringing up what are perceived as human rights abuses or the inability of the Hutu majority to get representation. They claim them as traitors and enemies of the state. So there's kind of an inbuilt situation that could result in the same turmoil again.
The same dynamics that exist.
It does, yeah. And in trying to remove the dynamic, I'm not sure that the present government aren't making it worse. But at the same time, as pragmatists, you know, Kagame is a very strong leader, and he's brought a lot of economic success to Rwanda and has created a stable society in the midst of some of the worst wars and conflicts in the world and the Central Africa region. So there's a catch-22 to it, you know. Are you willing to put up with a sort of a benign dictator or a strong man in return for stability, as opposed to Western democratic principles of, you know, one man, one vote and equal representation? And so, I mean, I think that's a dilemma that faces Westerners across the world. Is our perception of democracy, do we have the right to force that on other regions, you know?
Do the people of Rwanda see the hand of Europe anywhere in their troubles?
Oh, of course. They see it as the root cause, and they're right. I mean, the Belgians divided that country and created a sort of caste system between the majority, where the majority Hutu were almost indentured servants to the Tutsi minority, who were the elite, and then just upped and left that situation without any resolution to it, so that the Hutu majority, once they were freed of the shackles of the Belgians, turned on the Tutsi minority and essentially, you know, carried out a pogrom and drove them out of the country. So the root cause of all of Africa's sufferings pretty much are the colonial period, and Rwanda was a classic example of that. And they still feel the same. They feel that the French, during the genocide, the current government, feel that the French supported and bolstered the Hutu extremist government and kind of perpetuated the genocide, and they're not wrong on that.
And of course, the role of the UN in Rwanda has been questioned and examined.
That's a subject that I'm very interested in, because the next project I'm doing, or at least preparing for the minute, is a biography of the life of a man called Sergio Vieira de Mello, who was the sort of Bobby Kennedy of the UN, a young Brazilian who had grown up through the organization and had gone from Ethiopia to Cambodia to Vietnam to Bosnia, Kosovo, East Timor, and finally Iraq, where he was killed by the first Al-Qaeda bomb. It's the story of kind of this man growing up through the UN and what he hoped to do with it and what peacekeeping and peacemaking were about. So, and Rwanda obviously was a huge milestone in people's perceptions of the UN, because it and Srebrenica, it appeared that that they had abandoned people, and in fact, when the UN created safe areas, they were the most unsafe places to go. So yeah, so the whole question of what the UN's about and what people working in it aspire to achieve I'm very fascinated about.
But it's quite difficult to enforce a peace. It's quite difficult to be telling people to be peaceful at the point of a gun.
It's not even... Usually when the UN are interjected, it's either to divide two forces or after a conflict, they're asked to come in there to keep two warring sides apart. And I think the thing that Sergio Vieira learned was that you can't, that drawing a line in the sand and saying you stand there and you stand there and don't fight with each other was kind of ridiculous and pointless. That you had to arrive there with, as he did in East Timor, with an element of military force yourself, and do peacemaking. You know, bring about stability for the normal population. Get involved in policing more than just, you know, keeping the sides apart, and try to rebuild the norm, the basic norms of society. So, yeah, I mean, it's a thankless and extremely difficult job, and rarely does it work effectively. But what's the other substitute for that to allow Darfur to continue? This thing's been going on for 3 years now, and everybody wrings their hands and says it's terrible, and nobody does anything about it. So I think the UN is a very imperfect system and structure, but it's all we've got, and we should be struggling to improve it.
Is it a biography or a screenplay you're working on about this UN invite?
Well, there's a book. There's a woman called Samantha Power, who's actually originally from Cork. Her family is, and she wrote a book about genocide called A Problem from Hell, and she won a Pulitzer Prize, and she's now writing the biography of Sergio. And I'm adapting that as a screenplay for a film.
You're giving a screenplay masterclass in the Film Flan. Mm-hmm. How do you start? How do you take on? How do you start a film masterclass in screenwriting?
I ask people what their perceptions of what a screenplay or a script is. I mean, for me, it's a screenplay is a very visual thing. I always write out the sort of basic points on post-its and stick them on a wall and have a look, stand back and look at it and see does the jigsaw puzzle fit and so forth. So it's to talk to people about story and what their perceptions of what an audience expects from a movie. And for me, mostly it's entertainment, even though I do the most sort of on the surface of it depressing subjects or tough and challenging, I still always approach it as, look, this is a piece of entertainment, and why would people pay 10 euros or whatever it is in Ireland now to sit in a dark room and watch this? That's the fundamental question I begin with.
So how do you put the entertainment quotient into it?
I think entertainment, particularly in Hollywood, has become this sort of thing where, you know, if it ain't flash-bang, wallop explosions or funny ha-ha, then it's not entertainment. But I believe that people will go to the cinema to be transformed into another world and to find out about it. They go inquisitive. And if you can get them to bond with a particular character, you know, as we did with Jerry Conlon's character and Giuseppe Conlon, even more so, and with Paul Rousset-Sabagina, then the audience embarks on a journey with those people and cheers them on and is afraid for them and angry with them, and that becomes... I think that's a valid form of entertainment, and it's kind of being lost in Hollywood.
This entertainment of you being in sympathy with the character and living their traumas and trials and tribulations in your own heart while you're watching it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and going into like places you couldn't even imagine what it was like to and try to experience vicariously what your characters went through. So you mightn't come out laughing and slapping each other's backs and saying that was, you know, that was funny and great, but you come out of it moved, and I think the experience stays with you much longer than the kind of popcorn entertainment that we have now in a lot of the movies and multiplexes.
Your movies to date could be described as serious documentaries, really, couldn't they?
Yeah, well, they're more... I mean, I always think that the films that... I try to do, and that Jim does as well, are like distillations of the, you know, if a documentary is kind of the wine of a story, then what we do is the brandy, where you distill down the story to the basic elements and try and find the inner truth of what the characters felt and so forth. So yeah, to that degree it is, but I also think that you've got to really focus on the human tragedies or the human challenges that are within the story and take it to a different place from documentary. Try to and, you know, investigate inside the characters, something the documentary doesn't often do, you know.
I suppose in The Name of the Father and in Hotel Rwanda, your characters didn't go anywhere. They were locked in buildings, so
they physically didn't go anywhere. And
yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Emotionally, they went through the major change of their lives, you know. Jerry Conlon went from the kind of the petty thief who was caught up in this enormous struggle and abused and tortured into confessing, into this character, this man who got, you know, to a large degree got himself out and never lost hope and took the strength of the good father and carried that through. And Paul, to a degree, was like the perfect hotelier, the man who was driven by the compunction not to, you know, that if he had any guest, whether they were paying or unpaying, his obligation was to look after them. So the characters physically don't go anywhere and emotionally go through the most enormous change of their lives.
So it's nearly a theatrical sort of experience where you're right there with the character while they're going through all these emotions.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it's theatrical, and at the same time, it's visual because it is the movies, and because you want people to get inside the look and the feel and almost the smell of the thing. So that's what I look for. How can you create this world that we have basically no concept of, and then find an ordinary human being that we can bond with, so that between us we go through this experience of trying to imagine what it was like.
Well, you've succeeded very well to date, and good luck with your next project.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks very much for being with us in the 11th hour, Terry George.
All right, good luck, Patrick.